All right, well, thank you for having me. I think I know about 60% of you. Steve, you may not remember, but we were, I think, Doug Sherman's Bible study about 1980, many, many years ago, when we both had different color hair. And Trey, we prayed for that first child for a couple of years, brother, and very heartfelt success when Catherine had that first child. You know, when you have a speaker, there's a picture, you know, there was a picture of my granddaughter and me on the email and that sort of thing. And so you assume that person is an expert, maybe spent years in school. And I stand before you as a broken man and a man wounded many times in my journey as a father. And so I don't come before you as an expert, but I come to you as someone who has fallen many times and gotten back up by the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ to be a father worthy of the calling that I have. But before we get into that, I have a trivia question for you, Bill. Since Moby Dick was your required reading, who is the last only survivor at the end of the story of Moby Dick? Do you know? No? Wasn't that? Does anybody know? It was Ishmael. It was the narrator. At the very end of the story, he goes, "I am Ishmael." The narrator actually was the only one who survived. So maybe you need to go back and read it again. Maybe. Maybe it's been too long since you were in Franklin, Tennessee, reading Moby Dick. About every year, I try to read a classic, so it's really fun to go back. I've read Robinson Crusoe, which is an awesome Christian message. Moby Dick is a great book, and others. I became a dad in August 1st, 1983, and had really no idea as a 26-year-old what was going to happen to me over the next almost 36 years. While we were getting ready, I had to record something for John, and my phone rang, and it was my son, who's 36, and his five-year-old son in Florida FaceTiming with me. So we got a chance to do that, and that's a very rich experience. My son and I had a difficult time in high school, father-son behavior, his issues, wanting to be cool, wanting to go his own way. And he and I have a great relationship, but he named his son after me. And that was an indicator, more than any other words can describe, that our relationship was good, that there was no woundedness from that because of his willingness to name his son after me many years later. So I have, it's typical to kind of take Bible verses and match them to issues of parenthood, and I'm sure you've heard that a lot. I'm really going to kind of give you my own experience and some life lessons that I have learned that I would pass on to you that have been beneficial, I think, to me and my family. And I think the first is, in being a successful dad, is that we need, as Christian men, to live a life that is one of abiding in Christ. Prayer, Bible study, confession. And I think one of the most important things that dads need, that men need, is accountable relationships. Charlie Robinson, one of my closest friends, is here. Chris, who is at my table on Tuesday morning, is here. Those guys have heard my heart. I have heard their heart. And men tend to be secret keepers. We tend to not be honest about what is really giving us pain in our own life. And men need to, women come by that, you know, very naturally. You know, men get to a party and it's kind of like the return of the caveman. You know, they're slapping each other on the rear and talking about the football game and who's going to win the Texas OU game and so forth. And women are, you know, talking about, how's your child doing in school? And I was really been concerned about that. And men need to have more of that recipe in our lives. And that's hard at first, but a safe place with another man is a very good place, I think, for men to be. Part of that is, I think that to be a great dad is we need to deal with broken relationships in our own family of origin. So many of us have had tough relationships with our dad, with our mom, with brothers and sisters. And those inform in a very dramatic way how we are as parents, okay? If your dad was a hard-driving critical, never encouraging dad, you're going to say, you know what, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to be the opposite. And so we err on the opposite way, right? Everything that we do that happened in childhood informs how we are going to act as a husband and how we're going to act as a child. And so I would say, and I've done this, I will say, that if you have a broken relationship, if you have a hard relationship from your childhood with your parents, you need to go and you need to work on that. You need to start to resolve those issues, because it informs in very subtle ways that we're not aware of how we parent. And I had to do that about 10 years ago with my own mother. It was a hard conversation. It was a good conversation. And it was a very beneficial conversation. Number two is we need to love our wives deeply and sacrificially. You know, we kind of get into a role, you know, I'm going to work and she's going to raise the kids and she's, you know, we need to be together as a team to mentor our kids, to disciple our kids. But more importantly, one-on-one, we need to love our wife in a way that she feels and receives love. Now, that's very important, because I've mentored a lot of young men. And so they'll say, well, you know, I've taken my wife's car and I've gone and washed it. And all she wanted, this is a specific circumstance, all this woman wanted was for her husband to slow down and play with their kids. But his way, he wanted a clean car. Her car was a mess. She had three kids, right? We've all been there. She didn't care a thing if her car was clean, but he cared. And so he wasn't doing that to love her. He was doing that to create order for himself. And so it's a very disarming question to ask your wife, in what ways can I express love to you in a way that you feel and experience love? Now, there's a trap there, which I fell into, because I asked my wife that exact question when I was about 40. And it, you know, we have a great relationship. She goes, you know what? It would be great if you would wash my car. If you would take my car and wash it. We've got three kids. It was the same circumstance. But that did express love. I never did it one time. So I was not committed to loving her in a way that she feels and experiences love, because I asked the question and then I didn't follow through and do it. If you ask the question, be prepared for a hard answer, by the way. And if she tells you something, be sure and follow through. That was not my best move as a husband. If you hear nothing else from me today, I want you to hear the next thing. All right? Is choose not to pursue esteem for myself and my children. Now, there is a lot there, okay? But if you think of your life, every one of you, you're going to go back to the office, you're going to go back to work, you've got things to do. When you have stress in your life, it is an idol that is being challenged. And the idols are normally what gives us esteem. And so we are men, we not only want to make money, but we want to be important, right? We want to have perfect children. We want to live in the right place. We want to have the right car. We want to have the perfect family life, right? So we follow through on the Christian life. We go to church. We do our thing. But real brokenness is we refuse to pursue esteem for ourselves and for our children. Okay, so God's best is not always the most successful thing. So God's best is not always that our little darling becomes a cheerleader. That may be the worst for our daughter. It would give our daughter the most esteem, but it would not necessarily be the way that she's going to grow in Christ or that Christ is going to minister to her. You know, for us to take more time, to work harder, to make more money is not necessarily God's best for our family. If we can go home on time, you know, all of your children, for those of you who have three children like I do, some are going to have learning disabilities. Some are going to have low self-esteem. Some are going to have ongoing illness. Some are going to be athletes. Some are going to be violinists. And so for a man, if all we're doing is pursuing esteem for ourselves, we don't take the time to really discern the needs of each of our children. And let me tell you, parenting does not stop at 18 or 22 when they graduate from college. Bill continues to be a parent. I continue to be a parent. My daughter got divorced last year. It was a daily conversation over a year of very painful conversations. And so you just don't quit being a parent. Your roles change and your advice change and your position changes, but your role as a dad never quits. And so we can unpack that more at a future time, or I can recommend some books for you, but If you think about the stress in your life, the stress in your life is because we are pursuing esteem, and there is an idol that's being threatened in the process of pursuing esteem. The fourth is express unconditional approval for each child. I'm going to read you something that I recorded with John earlier and then tell you a story. Here's the recording. Since August 1st, 1983, I've been a dad, eventually to three children. Now I'm a grandfather to seven more children. I believe being a dad is one of the highest callings a man can have. So what is the most important job of being a dad? In the world today, answers can cover a wide range of values. Faith, integrity, responsibility, good grades would be high on many lists. But I believe the highest, most important part of my calling as a Christian father is to communicate every day how much my child is loved and approved by me and by our Heavenly Father. Not grades, not performance, not rules. The knowledge of God's unconditional love and acceptance learned from an early age will cement a child's faith into a healthy spiritual and emotional life. So when my son was two, I began to tell them, and I tell them regularly today, we'll end a phone conversation, they all live out of town. I will say, do you know that you have all the approval from me that you could ever have? You cannot have any more approval from me. That's not love, it's approval. Because I want them to have the safety and the knowledge that they do not have to perform. Okay, so esteem leads to perfectionism and performance, which leads to fear, okay, which leads to poor behavior patterns, all right? And so if you know that you are perfectly approved exactly the way you were born, then you have nothing to prove, all right? So you have healthier relationships. You don't have to be the boss of the company. You don't have to be the most important person in the room. You're the person that God has called you to be. I have this cottage industry that I'm sad that I have, which is I meet and deal with pastors who have failed. And this began when our pastor here in 2006 failed in a very dramatic fashion. And the normal church response to a pastor that's failed is, to protect the church, we're going to fire them and we're going to get them out of the church and we're going to get a new pastor to protect the church. Now, when you think about that logically, there's a man in the pew that is suffering silently with the same thing the pastor's failed from. And I've had some spectacular failures. I mean, prostitutes, massage parlors, drugs, stealing, I've got them all. Pastors are no different than all of the men that you know of that have failed from the same things. And so I'll meet with some of these pastors and I'll say, well, tell me your story. And they'll tell me their story. And I'll say, well, let me ask you a question. When you were a child, were you loved well? And they will either start crying or get mad. And the reason why they start crying or they get mad is because they were not loved well. And when you're not loved well, it's very difficult to make an emotionally healthy transition to life. And so many pastors go into the pastorate not because of a deep, profound sense of God's calling and richness in their life, is to right a wrong. I was wounded like this, and so I'm going to go make sure this never happens to somebody else, okay? Well, you can only do that so long because you're not doing it out of a deep sense of calling, out of a deep sense of God's provision for you. You're doing it out of our own strength to right a wrong. And there's a dead end there, and it's I can tell you, it's a spectacular failure. Now, so what we ask these churches to do is, okay, you can remove the pastor from his job, but bring him into relationship with you so that the guy in the pew that's suffering from the same thing can say, man, there's safety in confession. I want to be in that church. I can fail and I can be a member of that church. I can fail and someone know about it and not be destroyed. What we typically do, what churches typically do when pastors fail, is they destroy the pastor. And so nobody else is going to follow that example. There's a man that I mentor. He happens to be my age. He's 60. He goes to another church, and he and I were having lunch, and he was talking about his sons and that sort of thing. And so I was telling him about expressing unconditional approval. He goes, I'm going to be with my sons Memorial Day weekend in New York. Let me write that down. So he wrote it down. Then he called me at my office later. He goes, now let me get those words exactly right. Now you have all the approval that you could ever have. Okay, I got it. So he called me and then he emailed me. He goes, okay, could you write out exactly what you say? So this was way out of his comfort zone, okay? Very successful guy. Now, let me set it up for you. He had a 27-year-old son in New York, very successful, got a CFA, you know, doing well in the financial industry in New York City. Younger brother, 24, had diabetes, had learning disabilities, had a difficult time graduating from college, and was in New York waiting tables, all right? So can you see the tension? Anybody got that tension in their family? So he went up to New York, and I'm not exaggerating, there was conversation at lunch, conversation over the phone, email, so that he could get it, you know, just, okay. Hopefully he did it more smoothly than this, but the key to the story is Memorial Day weekend. And he told his sons, he goes, do you know that you have all the approval from me that you could ever have? I love you, I respect you, and I want to give you a gift of my blessing. End of the story, Father's Day comes along. Younger son calls him and says, Dad, that's the most important thing I've ever heard in my life. Not the gospel. The gospel wasn't the most important thing the 24-year-old had heard. The approval of the unconditional approval of the father to the son, most important words the young man had ever heard. And so the father called me the next week to tell me, he goes, you're really onto something there. It's called the gospel, all right? Yes, I think that God was really onto something there when he gave us the ability to experience unconditional approval and acceptance. So coaching your children, I've got some bullet points here, and I'll rattle them off, and then we can ask questions if you'd like to. Number one, in coaching your children, make coaching consistent with how you live your life. At times, and I grew up in the 60s, my mother would say, well, you need to do this. And I said, well, Mom, you're not doing that. And she goes, well, do as I say, not as I do, right? How many times have we heard that, right? Not only is that a bad phrase, it is a bad way to live our life. Let's just talk about a small issue of integrity, all right? There are times, as Christian men, that we are tempted to not tell the truth, you know? They gave us too much change, so we walk out of the store. We've got two members playing golf, and we only play one guest fee, you know? And your children see everything that we're doing. Okay, and their BS meter is very high, right? And so we have to live a life of integrity if we want our child to be a person of integrity. Because we'll just view it as, you know, not paying for one round of golf, and they'll view it in a much more dramatic way, right? So we have to coach with integrity. They will turn out like we are, okay? Are you not like your parents? Does your wife not say, you are just like your dad or mother in a certain circumstance? It's not so fun when it comes your way. Reprove in a way that breaks a child's will and not his spirit. And this was my experience with my son. We had four very difficult years from 16 to 20 with my son. And he was just not going to do what we wanted him to do. And so finally, he had no car and no allowance for a year in college. And so I was driving him to college in August before his sophomore year, okay? No car, no allowance. From Dallas to Waco, he just yelled at me about how this was gonna ruin our relationship and this was so unreasonable and that sort of thing. And about Waco, I hadn't said a word. I was just the punching bag, right? You're nodding, Jim, right? You've been to that party? Yeah, that's right, just sit there and listen. He goes, you're not saying anything. And I said, I'm willing to run the risk that it'll destroy our relationship. I'm willing to run the risk. And then we drove on and about a month later, at his suggestion, we went through a purpose-driven life together over the phone. And today at 35, he and I still do a book over the phone. He lives in New York, and it's a great way to knit our hearts together as a father and a son. He's an elder at one of the Redeemer churches in New York, and so there was a happy ending to his story. But he's a relational, loving guy and has three sons. The third thing is affirm times of good character more than performance. So when a child brings home a report card, when a child gets a different job, we tend to affirm items of performance, because really that's what we value. You're the captain of the football team. You scored a touchdown. You made more tackles. You made an A+, straight A's on your report card. we tend to affirm performance more than character. We have some very good friends, and I've loved on their daughter some, and I said, you know, I just think your daughter is so great. She's really, you know, she's really recovered a lot, and she's really doing well. And the mom goes, yeah, if she could just meet a Christian guy. What if it's not God's will for her to meet a great Christian guy? All right, but we as parents have a hook, and the hook is performance. All right, so if they make a B+, what do some of our dads say? Why wasn't it an A? Yeah. You never made a B in college, right? Never made an A either. But and so, what do we affirm? Okay, we affirm what we value. Okay, and we affirm performance. And so, I'm mentoring another young woman who is a tough case, and I said to her, I said, you know what? You're driving down the road of life, and you're in this car called perfectionism and performance. And you're asking this Christian counselor to help tune up the car and align the wheels and fix this car called performance and perfectionism. And I said, I would like for you to consider stopping the car and getting out and walking down the road hand in hand with Jesus and learn what it's like to be loved by Jesus and forget performance. And that has upset her world. I mean, she's coming to church. She and I had lunch last Sunday. She will be a dramatic recovery from perfectionism if that's the case. You know, you never quit being a dad, but your roles and advice change. And so as an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old, you're giving lots of advice about getting jobs and that sort of thing. But as a young married person, your advice needs to change, and we need to not give advice. Here's an example. Now, for all of us who have children, we've had infants, right? You kind of don't get children. It's an unusual circumstance if you don't have infants, unless we're adopting six-year-olds, right? Okay, so it's safe to say that all of us here have had infants. Now, there's an item on the market that's a big selling item for newborn children called an owlet. Does anyone know what an owlet is? So I'm surprised that you would know what this is. So an owlet is a sock that you put on an infant that measures heart rate and oxygen density as a child, and it links to your iPhone. And the ad, I looked it up. If you look it up, it's hilarious. The ad says 96% of buyers say this reduces stress of a young parent. That's not true. It does the opposite, because what do? Boom. Okay, she's still breathing, all right? Yeah, every second. And so the point is, if you have grandchildren and you're taking care of your grandchildren, your children will go, you know, they don't need to eat sugar, that, you know, right? We had them, we get it, but yet your children think you're an idiot in terms of raising parents, okay? And the advice is, we need to do it how they do it. You know, we need to get out of the advice game. We need to be an encourager and a lover of those kids. So our roles as a dad change. So that's all I have.